You're listening to Defending Faith, Family, and Freedom, featuring Gary Bauer, Senior Vice President of Public Policy at the Dr. James Dobson Family Institute. And now, here's Gary.
Hi, this is Gary Bauer, Senior Vice President for Public Policy and Culture at the James Dobson Family Institute. Welcome to our podcast, Defending Faith, Family, and Freedom. I'm glad you're with us. I want to talk again today about a theme sort of related to this really important year, the 250th birthday of the United States of America. And I've devoted quite a few podcasts and essays to this subject because, hey, a 250th birthday doesn't come around but once. And we're fortunate enough to be living at a time where we are recognizing the beginning of our country 250 years ago. First of all, let me just say, the thought has struck me a couple of times, how I wish our friend and colleague, Dr. James Dobson, were alive to experience this year. Dr. Dobson was a patriot. I mean, he was a patriot from the top of his head to the bottom of his feet. He loved patriotic stories. He used to love those stories when I would tell them in speeches. He would tell them in his own speeches. We spent quite a few times over the years discussing various historical nuggets about the beginning of America. And I know that he would be enjoying every minute of this year. In fact, I suspect he might even feel a little bit like I do. I wish there was more celebrations going on because in this 250th year of our beginning, there's no guarantee we're going to make 300 or no guarantee we'll make it to the 500th birthday of America. In fact, you can look back on our history and there were a couple of close calls about whether we would make it to the 250th. And I think Dr. Dobson, Jim, would be saying, man, I wish there were more people that, you know, were aware of this and realized how special this is. And hopefully we are, hopefully any of you listening, I hope you're using this year. I know Dr. Dobson would want you to use this year to teach your children and grandchildren about the wonder of a place called America. So I want to share a couple of thoughts with you on this again, but I want to use my good friend, but more importantly, a justice of the Supreme Court, Justice Clarence Thomas, to sort of make these points because he makes them better than I could. Not too long ago, Justice Thomas was asked to speak at the University of Texas at Austin, and he was asked to talk about America and our 250th birthday. And not surprisingly, he decided to approach the subject by going to what he believes, and I believe, and many scholars believe, is the most important founding document, not surprisingly, the Declaration of Independence itself. It's not a long document, but the Declaration of Independence is different than the Constitution. The Declaration of Independence is what it says it is. It's when the men that began our country declare they're going to begin our country. And they're declaring that to a very powerful country, Great Britain, who believes they own us. And so what the founders were doing in the Declaration of Independence is a really bold act. And I want you to hear how Clarence Thomas, Justice Clarence Thomas, describes what they did.
However, when I encounter the Declaration of Independence anew today, I am most struck by the final sentence. It can be easy to forget, 250 years later, the courage it took for those 56 men to sign the Declaration. Arguably, those men committed treason against the king, risking death at the hands of an empire far mightier than the newborn United States. They thus concluded with the memorable final sentence, and I quote, "And for the support of this declaration, with a firm reliance on the protection of divine providence, we mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor." I will say it again. We mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor.
What Justice Thomas is pointing out, and by the way, you notice that he says this is after he took another look at the Declaration. He decided that the most important sentence might be that one he just quoted. He said it because Justice Thomas and I both believe that the most important sentence actually is the second sentence and the second paragraph. "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal and endowed by their Creator," et cetera, et cetera. But Justice Thomas says, you know, "I reread the Declaration preparing for this speech, and now I have a new appreciation of how important the last sentence is." And it's this, again, this reference to, "We pledge to each other." So these men were making an agreement with each other. They're looking at each other as they write these words. These men had been through a lot already. And so they're looking at each other and saying, we pledge to each other our lives. This is not a rhetorical flourish. If we would have lost the Revolutionary War, these men would have been hung. So they were literally saying, we make a pledge to each other, and we do that realizing that we could lose our lives. And then he says, or the founder said, our lives, our fortune. The word means what you think it means. These men owned property. They had assets. Some of them were richer than others. None of them were super rich. Most of them, many of them were pastors. Some of them were small tradesmen. But they all, like all of us, dependent on their money, their assets, to take care of their families. They not only would be killed if we lost the war, all of their money would be taken away. Their wives and children would be left destitute. In fact, they could very well live out on the streets as homeless people. They would lose their homes. So it was very possible that not only would the founders be hung, but their spouses and children would be struck down into poverty that they maybe would never recover from. They would be seen as traitors, not as patriots the way we see them. They would be perceived as traitors. And then it goes on to say, our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor. Well, that means you're the kind of man or woman that sets out to do something and makes promises to other people and risk mighty things. And if we didn't have founders that did those things, they would not be honorable men. They would lose their sacred honor. Now, to do this took incredible courage to make this statement. And the reason this is so relevant today is we're living in a time where it takes courage. It's a very dangerous world. We're in a war right now with Iran, and who knows, by the time you listen to this, what new developments there may be on that. We have a rising communist China that wants to replace the United States as the preeminent power in the world. We live in a country that is beset by political violence. There's been three attempts to assassinate the president of the United States. Some people have paid terrible prices to even say you support the president of the United States. Some people lost jobs. There were people that were beat up just for saying, hey, I support the president. So we live at a time when courage is required. And Clarence Thomas wants to go back to this point of the need for courage because he's pointing out that if the founders didn't have the courage, the words they were writing wouldn't mean anything. Now, listen to what he says when he elaborates on this.
"Nothing in the Declaration of Independence, I now realize, matters without that final sentence. Without that sentence, The rest of the Declaration is but mere words on parchment paper. Nice words, but nonetheless, just words. What changed the world was not the words, but the commitment and spirit of the people who were willing to labor, sacrifice, and even give their lives what Lincoln in Gettysburg called the last full measure of devotion for the Declaration's principles.
So Justice Thomas, a man that sits on the Supreme Court, he understood the courage that took, and he understood that without the courage, the words wouldn't mean anything. Now, Clarence Thomas knows a thing or two about courage. He's now the longest sitting justice, I believe, in our history on the Supreme Court. And there was a moment back when all this began, when he was nominated to be a justice on the Supreme Court, where it was very much in doubt whether he would be confirmed by the United States Senate. In fact, Justice Thomas and I, we knew each other before this, but we didn't really become close until that confirmation battle that he found himself in. I watched that battle, and I saw that the liberals in Congress, the liberals in the United States Senate, were going to do everything they could do to prevent him from being a justice. They were particularly angry that he was a black man who was a conservative. And they did not want a black Supreme Court justice who was going to be promoting conservative ideas and actually looking at the words of the Constitution and interpreting those words, not just doing what the liberal justices do, which is they make up things. They decide what outcome they want, and then they twist the words to justify the outcome. When you're a conservative justice like Clarence Thomas that believe the original intent of the Constitution is important, you get a dispute in front of you. You look at the words of the Constitution and you say, oh, well, here's what the Constitution says, so I'm going to have to rule this way on the dispute that's before the court. And you know what that means? That not often, but fairly regularly, conservative justices that care about the Supreme Court and about the Constitution have to reach decisions that they don't agree with. They may have a view on something that is different than what the Constitution requires of us. So that takes a lot of honor to be able to do that. So Justice Thomas was nominated. The hearings that he had to go through were disgusting. They tried to beat him intellectually, asking him questions about various provisions of the Constitution. He outdebated all of them. He made some of the senators look like fools. And when they failed to be able to beat him intellectually, a major effort was made to smear him, to attack his character. And when I saw that happening, I rushed out and filed papers to form a group called the Citizens Committee to Confirm Clarence Thomas. And we raised money and we ran ads against the senators that were doing this smear of Clarence Thomas. And eventually, he was confirmed to sit on the Supreme Court. And his time on the court has been a time of honor. He has been in the majority on issue after issue after issue. But I give you all that background because Clarence Thomas knows what courage is. I'm telling you, my friends, I had to go up for Senate confirmation later in my life, and it was a little difficult. I can't say even today that I would have had the courage to go through Senate confirmation if they tried to do to me what they tried to do to Clarence Thomas. The pressure on him and on his wife was, it's impossible to describe. I was with them occasionally when it was just the two of them and me and one other advisor to them in the room. And I saw their faces when these scurrilous charges were made. I don't think you can imagine what that can do to a husband and wife. But I saw what it was doing to them. And there were a lot of voices saying to Clarence Thomas, stop this. Don't go through any more of this. You and your wife, you've got to save yourselves. Just you withdraw your name. You can make a really tough statement when you withdraw your name, and you can say some things to the senators you would like to say, but you shouldn't continue to go through this. That's not what he did. Clarence Thomas and his wife, they talked about it, they prayed about it. They went back into the hearing room, and Justice Thomas, in a room that was so packed with people, you couldn't put one more person in that room. There probably were 100 reporters in that room. I was there. And Justice Thomas walked back in the room, his wife sitting behind him, and he's looking at a panel of about 15 senators, half of which would do anything to defeat him and keep him off the Supreme Court. And he looked at them and he said a sentence that became famous. He said, "This is a high-tech lynching." Wow. The air got sucked out of that room. To look senators in the eye and say to them, "You're trying to lynch me in the media, just like bigots years ago lynched men that looked like me." Oh, the senators couldn't get the words out fast enough. They were spitting the words out. This was one of the most dramatic moments in American history. And he did win confirmation by just a couple of votes. And he's been serving on the Supreme Court all these years. You know, my friends, he paid a terrible price for getting on the court. I'll talk a little bit about that. But you may be saying, okay, well, great, but what's that got to do with me? What it's got to do with you is what I said earlier. What Clarence Thomas said in this speech recently is that without courage, there wouldn't be an America. And it's clear today that without courage, we're not going to be able to keep America. And without courage, Clarence Thomas wouldn't be on the Supreme Court. And he wouldn't be making speeches trying to explain to us how we are going to have courage if we're going to save America. Well, I know none of you are likely to be nominated for the Supreme Court. I don't suspect that any of you are going to run for president. Well, you may be saying to yourself, "Well, what do you mean? What do I have to do? I'm not some courageous person. I mean, I'm just living my life, trying to pay my bills, trying to raise my children. So, you mean I'm going to have to be courageous too?" Yeah, you are. And Justice Thomas, in this speech, toward the end of the speech, he speaks directly to you. He's giving this speech to a graduating class of college students, many of whom will go on to have very maybe influential lives. But Justice Thomas, while speaking to those students, I believe intentionally was also speaking to you. This is what he said.
"But in my view, we must find in ourselves that same level of courage that the signers of the Declaration had, so that we can do for our future what they did for theirs. Each of you will have opportunities to be courageous every day, whether your calling in life is as a day laborer, a stay-at-home mom, a small business owner, an educator, an office worker, a judge, or some other endeavor. It may mean speaking up in class tomorrow when someone around you expects you to live by lies. It may mean confronting today's fashionable bigotries, such as anti-Semitism. It may mean standing up for your religion when it is mocked and disparaged by a professor. It may mean not budging on your principles when it will entail losing friends or being ostracized. It may mean running for your school board when you see that they are teaching your children to hate your values and our country. It may mean turning down a job offer that requires you to make moral or ethical compromises. One thing I do know to be true. It will mean waking up every day with the resolve to withstand unfair criticism and attacks.
Well, my friends, it's not every day that you have the blessing to have a Supreme Court justice talk directly to you, whether you're a student or a homemaker, a mom, a dad, somebody that sees what's going on in the schools, somebody that's being told to lie, you know, the lies. That boy's a girl. You got to call him she. No, you don't. In fact, you must never lie. You know, that paragraph is a paragraph that Dr. Dobson said in his own way, probably 100 times that I heard him. I mean, this was the message of Dr. Dobson in his entire life. It's a message that I've tried to emulate in all of my life, in the work that I've done in various places that God has put me. What Jim Dobson and what the James Dobson Family Institute is telling you that is that you have to be a courageous Christian citizen. You've got to speak up. You've got to protect your children. You've got to be willing even to lose friends if that's what happens. You've got to be willing to say no to a high-paying job if taking it means you're going to have to do things that violates our core Christian beliefs or the core beliefs of our nation. This is an age that requires courage. The founders had it, and we have a country. The men that fought the Civil War had it, and slavery ended, and the country endures. And now we're in another era, the 250th birthday, where unless we have courage, we will condemn our children and grandchildren to having lesser lives than we do. Justice Thomas knows what it's like to have courage, even when he won the confirmation battle and was put on the Supreme Court. For years, he could not make a graduation speech because demonstrators would interrupt the speech. When the National Museum of Black History was built here in Washington, D.C., Clarence Thomas wasn't in it, even though he was a black justice of the Supreme Court. It was only when some of us had to fight another battle, pointing out that it's the National Museum of Black History, not the National Museum of Liberal Black History. A black Supreme Court justice deserves to be in it, and he's in it today. So there are many things that one can do in this 250th anniversary. You can say the Pledge of Allegiance with more gusto. You may read something that the Founding Fathers said. You may read Justice Thomas's speech. I encourage you to do so. But without courage, all of it is just words. Only courage will ensure that America will endure as one nation under God. Well, thank you very much for being with us again on Defending Faith, Family, and Freedom. Be sure to come back again.
Subscribe to Gary Bauer's Defending Faith, Family, and Freedom, where you find your favorite podcasts. Just hit the subscribe button to ensure you receive every episode.